Tax Act knows you probably don't need help filing taxes. But if you get stuck, we have live experts you can talk to. And who knows, you could hit it off and become long-term tax friends, staying up late at night, talking about deductions, refunds, personal exemptions. Heck, you could even fall in love and create a little dependent of your own one day. Or they could just answer your filing questions. Tax Act. Let's get them over with.
The Last Word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
Tomorrow marks the fifth anniversary of the first full lockdown, which banned all non-essential travel and contact with others. We were all told to keep apart in public. Do you remember the 2 metre distances? And those most at risk were told to cocoon. So how has actually changed our lives? What impact have all these successive lockdowns had on relationships? Do we have a better work-life balance? Did you get a pet that you now regret? 36% of people who did get the pets regret that. We've got two guests with us. Tim Bergen is a trained psychologist who is a people consulting partner at EY Ireland. And Helen Vaughan, first psychotherapist from Maynooth Counselling, is with us. And I'm just going to take some of these CSO figures at random, a major survey that it has done on the long-term social impacts. Does it surprise you that now apparently 15% of people say they try to avoid social gatherings since COVID?
No, it doesn't surprise me. I think people got very unused to kind of having to deal with maybe social anxieties they might have had around going to social things or being in large crowds of people. You know, I think when those coping skills weren't tested and used, a lot of people lost them. And then when the, you know, society went back to normal, they just chose not to push them or not to do the things if they felt in any way uncomfortable. I think people just got out of those habits and maybe, yeah, didn't want to push their anxiety, so just avoid it altogether.
And then what about children and teenagers who may not have had the skills in the first place? Did the gap and loss of opportunity to develop those skills impact upon them?
It did, because a lot of students, like a lot of teenagers, didn't go to school, obviously, for a year or two. And you would have a lot of anxious children in those groups anyway. And then, again, their coping skills aren't being used because they're not being forced to go to school. And that means when school resumed, a lot of teenagers didn't go back to school. Or those anxieties became bigger because they weren't being tested, they weren't being used. And I think stats in terms of children not wanting to go to school are higher than they were pre-COVID. And I think anxiety is up. Although I do think that we're now recognising it more, no matter what age we are, and we're sort of getting help with it rather than just going through it on our own.
Apparently 16% of the respondents got a pet during the pandemic. I hear a dog barking in the background. Are you one of those people, Helen?
A child and a dog. No, I only got a dog in the last month.
All right, okay, well, that's a challenge for you. But it is interesting to see, it's actually a very small number of the respondents who got a dog or a cat regretted doing so, 6% and 3%. That would suggest that from those people who did actually add a pet to the family, it actually worked very well for them.
I think it did. I think it helped people, like certain families who maybe the relationships were strong, it helped them realize that. I think there's a lot of people who their relationships weren't great. Sorry, I have a child following me trying to get my attention.
I can hear that, Helen. Do you want to deal with that? And I'll bring in our other guest to let you come back then in a second, all right? Tim Bergen from EY Ireland as people consulting partner. It was interesting though as well that a lot of the figures suggest that those who coped better were those who had the income to allow them to do better.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of interesting stats coming out of the survey. And I suppose if you think about the type of profile of an individual where it might suit is if you have a more comfortable working arrangement at home. So I think that probably stands to reason in terms of income. I think what's interesting overall, though, when you look at the statistics is that a lot of the statistics are overwhelmingly positive, I guess, when you think about the experience or the ability to engage with a hybrid working model or a flexible working model. And I suppose what we see working with our clients a lot is that this topic, it can become polarizing and it can often feel like it has to be one way or the other. So you have to fall on the side of being solely in favor of always in the office or in favor of hybrid working. There's almost no in between. But I think what our experience tells us of working through the last 5 years is that it is a bit more nuanced than that. And there are a lot of meaningful differences that mean that you have to think very carefully about what's the right model for an organization, for example, depending on the nature of the work that you do, the industry that you're in, the types of customers or clients that you're serving. And also then even at an individual level, what's the profile and mix of your workforce? It often spans 5-6 generations in some instances, all with different preferences. So to me, what these stats would suggest, as they have done all the way along the way, is we have to take a nuanced approach to working models to make sure that it works for the organisation and the individual.
Yeah, because apparently this one study which suggests 56% of employees are still working remotely or on a hybrid basis. Now, I'm sure there's lots of people listening who are in work or who are coming from work and are in jobs where they don't have the flexibility or the possibility of being able to work from home or work remotely. But it is interesting to look at the figures. Apparently, 55% of the relevant respondents strongly agreed that their work-life balance had improved since they commenced working remotely from home. More than 3 in 10 said they agree with the statement. So that is 86% of those surveyed saying that if they are working from home, they seem to like it.
Yeah, and I think as well, you know, to me, that makes a lot of sense. I think we always, I suppose, pre-COVID would have talked mostly about work-life balance as being, you know, almost a very rigid 9-to-5. And if you don't need to engage with work outside of that 9-to-5, that means you've got balance. But I think what we've realized through COVID is that balance is a much more individual thing. And I think what hybrid and flexible working patterns have provided is a greater breadth of what balance can mean. So, for example, if you are an individual who's in a position that you're a carer, you have a much greater opportunity now to engage with work in a different way to fit around your personal needs than you would in the past. Similarly, for individuals who have mobility challenges, you now have an opportunity to engage with work in a much more different way, but also even to provide basic flexibility during the day. You know, it's not that long ago that we had some contracts that would actually call out the entitlement for a bank break, and it used to be for an hour to allow you to go to the bank so you could queue up and do a transaction. So there's a lot of positives in moving towards a model that provides a greater individual balance than we used to have, which was a broad brush approach to balance that often didn't suit.
Okay, Helen Vaughan is back with us. A few other things that jump out that are of interest, and I'm not sure this is necessarily a positive thing, that 61% of social media users report an increase in the amount of time they spend on social media since 2020. And this is most common in young people, about 70%, rather than those who are over the age of 70. What do you make of that?
Is that people had less social activity, so they got used to being online more, or their social activity switched to online, and that has remained? Do you know what I mean? That if
yes.
We weren't seeing people, maybe we were texting more, maybe we were sharing on social media or whatever that is. You know, I do think for young people, social media is obviously hugely addictive and in some ways harmful if used too much. And it's very hard for them to break that cycle of, if everyone else is on Snapchat, I want to be there too. Do you know what I mean? That it is a tough thing for children to manage, and they do probably need boundaries for it.
And then what do you make as well, Helen, of people's personal hygiene habits? As in, you occasionally now see people wearing a mask, but it's still very rare to see people wearing a mask to actually protect themselves. But apparently, it's only just more than half of all respondents who report they wash their hands more often now than they did before the onset of the pandemic. Would you not have thought that, given that all sorts of illnesses actually tend to pass by hands and by handshake, that we would have gotten more into the habit of continuing to wash our hands?
Yeah, I would say I still wash my hands more, and I would say I still prefer not to shake hands if I can avoid it. Like, some of the habits that we were taught are safer have maybe stayed with us, you know, that I don't know, I find it hard touching people I don't know, because you don't know who has what. And in a work context, if I can avoid shaking hands, I kind of will. And I don't know if most people are like that, you know, they do think about their hand hygiene more, because it was drummed into us for months. Do you remember, you know, the lessons in how to wash your hands? And we did it all for so long. I feel like it's almost ingrained on us at this point.
Well, a quarter of respondents said they tried to avoid handshaking when interacting with people outside of the home. And a final one to you, Tim Bergen, on this from EY Ireland, because apparently 6 in 10 respondents report that they try to avoid others when they are themselves sick, which I suppose is good manners to exhibit towards other people. But again, is that something that I suppose employers would want to encourage, that employers don't want sick people coming in infecting others?
Yeah, and I think if you remember to pre-COVID, there almost would have been a pressure to attend work even if you were very sick. And often that was in small office spaces where germs were easily spread. And you did tend to see waves of sickness throughout the year, certainly at the peak in winter, and you see the impact on the health system. So I think the fact that we've now got technology that enables people to work from home when they are exhibiting symptoms of being ill is a very positive change, because it means hopefully that we don't have the same level of spread of illness throughout office working environments, even on the commute to work on the Lewis or the train. And that can only be a good thing, because hopefully it has a knock-on positive impact on the toll on the health system as well. So, you know, it's good to see that people are starting to not feel that pressure to attend work when they do feel sick.
Thank you very much, Tim Bergen from EY Ireland and Helen Vaughan from Maynooth Counselling.
The Last Word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.